Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. On today's show, I'm speaking with Oregon ACLU Executive Director David Rogers and Clatsop County District Attorney Josh Marquis about a new ACLU campaign entitled They Report to You. The campaign's purpose is to educate voters about what the ACLU contends is the overly influential role of district attorneys in the criminal justice system. According to the Civil Rights Advocacy Group, each county's top prosecutor is the most powerful player in the criminal justice system, yet many voters don't even know who their DA is or what he or she does. And because DAs are often elected in uncontested races, the ACLU argues they are not accountable to voters and resist criminal justice reforms to reduce prison terms and to require greater reporting of racial profiling. Before joining the nonprofit nonpartisan advocacy group 2 years ago, Rogers previously led the Partnership for Safety and Justice, leading work in the areas of criminal justice and public safety. Marquis has worked as Clatsop County's DA since 1994. He has served as a spokesperson for the National District Attorneys Association and is a former president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, David and Josh.
Thanks, Joan.
Thank you.
I'd like to start, David, by asking you why the ACLU decided to launch the campaign now, the campaign They Report to You.
Well, we have a lot more work to do in terms of improving our criminal justice system, making it fairer, making it more effective, making it more just. And to a large degree, we've actually seen that one of the roadblocks in Oregon to making those kinds of improvements have been the ways that district attorneys in Oregon have weighed in around both influencing their local county criminal justice system, but also reform efforts at the state legislature. And this is a body of elected officials that very few Oregonians actually really know about, know their role, or even know that they're elected. And so we think it's important to be able to raise public education about the role that DAs play and ensure that voters are more engaged with district attorneys, because to a large degree, we don't think that DAs right now have really been advocating in ways that reflect public opinion and values.
Okay, and I'll be sure to let you get in, Josh. But David, I wanted to ask, how is it that the ACLU can educate voters about what a DA does?
Well, there are a lot of different ways. First of all, we have a statewide website that's basically www.theyreporttoyou.org. And it has a lot of information about district attorneys. You can find out who your DA is in whatever county you're in Oregon. There are three videos that actually help explain why it is we're engaging in this campaign. There's a system set up so that you can actually email your district attorney and reach out directly, because they're not always that accessible. And, you know, we've also been door knocking. We're doing community forums. There's just a wide range of ways that we're going to be engaging in public education, and not just now, not just in the next few months, but for the next several years. We think that we're in it for the long run.
Josh, our county might be a little bit different in that it is small, and you, I would imagine, are more accessible than, say, in a county the size of Multnomah County. Do you think it's accurate, though, that many people, even in our small county, don't understand your role as the district attorney?
I think there's some truth in what David says, and the concept of the ACLU's campaign, They Report to You, is fundamentally correct. That's exactly who I report to. America is unique in the world in joining democracy and justice by making the chief prosecutorial official in almost every county in America elected. I've traveled overseas, and people from England to China to Italy are just appalled at the thought that the chief prosecutor would be elected. They think that's bad. We in the United States think it's good. I would note that one of my concerns about the campaign is it's we call off the shelf. In other words, it's the same campaign being used in New York and California. There's nothing specific to Oregon. I know that David was here in Clatsop County several months ago addressing people who were interested in this. And unless I'm very mistaken, when the issue of one of the issues he brings up is that many people don't know who their DAs are. I think even David had to concede that in Clatsop County, almost everybody knows who their DA is. Whether they like me or not, I am frankly ubiquitous, either for the good or the bad. I've stood for election 7 times. The first time was heavily contested. The remainder were not. I have a website, www.coastda.com. I have a radio show in which I play jazz on this radio station. I don't talk politics. But I can't imagine anybody in this county thinking of me as inaccessible. That doesn't mean they always agree with me. I also would agree that the role of the district attorney is an important one. But the idea that DAs are roadblocks to reform, and particularly talking about it on the local level. In this county, one of the most important issues, I think, and certainly one that I was involved in, was the issue about whether drunk driving cases were being handled fairly. And David may not be familiar with this, but perhaps he is. The issue was whether or not the city of Astoria was maintaining essentially a separate drunk driving court where people with influence and money got treated differently than those who didn't. And I waged a very public battle in the courts, in the elections and elsewhere. And eventually, I prevailed. And in 2015, the city relented, and now all the drunk driving cases come to my office. Not because I get paid more for doing them, but we believe in what John Adams said, a nation of law, not a nation of men, meaning that the law is more important. This idea, again, you know, the question is, what is reform? David's version of reform is letting people out of prison earlier, providing more opportunities to not get convicted. And although that is part of a DA's job, for example, advocating for victims' rights, which simply didn't exist 30 years ago, the right of a woman who was beaten simply to stand up in court and say, I want to tell the judge what I want done. Or, for example, more recently, something called Measure 57, which voters passed in 2008, which was an alternative to a much harsher law, which frankly passed because the DAs, including myself, joined hands with the traditional progressive leadership of the Democratic Party. So I don't see DAs as necessarily standing in the way of reform.
Okay.
Well, we should have that conversation.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
So, that's one perspective, but let's talk about, first of all, when the ACLU of Oregon talks about reform, we're talking about really moving our criminal justice system to a place where our policies are backed by evidence, are backed by research, and that we have multiple strategies. It's not just about the hammer. And you know, so let's just actually identify two examples of the places where district attorneys have largely been a roadblock, in some ways successful, in some ways unsuccessful, to moving us out of the policies of the 1990s and closer towards evidence-based research-driven policies. So there was a statewide effort to be able to pass a modest modification of drug possession sentences to move it from a felony to a misdemeanor, just small user amounts.
And this that just happened.
This is a policy that was actually passed by the legislature with bipartisan support. The most vocal opposition were district attorneys, including District Attorney Marquis. And so what we know is that, I'd say, first of all, there's in large support for this reform. 73% of Oregonians supported this policy change across the urban-rural divide, across party affiliation. We also know, I think, that most people would agree that the war on drugs is really a failed strategy. And in fact, statewide research showed, just released this June by Pew, which is actually one of the most respected public policy national research organizations in the country, showed that with a 50-state analysis, that increased imprisonment, increased sentences for drug-related problems has shown no effect at reducing drug use, reducing drug arrests, or reducing overdose deaths. So we know that the current approach that we were taking hasn't been successful, and that we need policies that are really about helping people rebuild their lives and about emphasizing treatment and prevention. Nonetheless, in that one of the ways, moving simple small user possession of small user amounts from a felony to a misdemeanor, is that felony convictions make it so much harder for people to get future access to housing, to employment, to educational opportunities. So even if people are doing the hard work to rebuild their lives and get themselves pointed in the right direction, that felony conviction can be a huge barrier. So moving it to a misdemeanor actually allows for accountability, but also actually allows for people to be able to move forward in their lives.
Okay.
And it's research and evidence-based. And yet, this is a place where the most vocal opposition were district attorneys.
What? Okay. Josh?
I'd like to answer, because David probably didn't have the advantage of listening to one of Joan's previous programs she did about 2 months ago, where she had myself and one of the two primary local public defenders, Mary Ann Merck, who's an excellent defense attorney, talk about this exact bill. And unfortunately, what David is doing is a lot of bumper sticker rhetoric, saying evidence shows, or 73% of Oregonians. Well, you can do a push poll and say things like, do you think minor drug users should spend lots of time in prison or be rehabilitated? Well, I'm going to answer that question. Minor drug abusers should not spend time in prison. And let's be clear, in Oregon, not in Mississippi or some other place, in Oregon, only 7% of the people in prison are there on drug-related offenses. Zero are there for simple possession. In this county, Mary Ann Merck, who is a formidable opponent, agreed with me that this bill, the very bill that David's talking about, was a disaster. What it would do is prevent us from forcing drug addicts into drug court, which has been in existence in this county, David, for 15 years, and it only exists because I'm willing to let go, basically, of the reins of the control of the case. And basically, a whole bunch of cases that are drug-related, people who are drug addicts, not just drug cases, but drug-related cases, go into drug court. If they follow through on what the judge thinks is adequate sobriety and therapy, their case is dismissed. They don't not only have a misdemeanor, they don't have any conviction at all. This bill that was pushed through, I have no trouble. I was one of two DAs who testified against it. I think it's idiotic. I think if you asked most Oregonians, do you think someone should be able to have 10 to 12 doses of heroin, have two previous convictions, and have absolutely no possibility of supervised probation, they would say that's a crazy idea. So
if they're charged with a misdemeanor, they don't have the option of drug court?
I'm sorry, John, what did you...
Oh, I was just asking, if they're charged with a misdemeanor rather than a felony, they're not given the option of entering drug court?
No, actually, Mary Ann spoke directly to that. They would technically be given the option, but now David's not a lawyer, so maybe he doesn't understand this, but I've been a defense lawyer. And if you're an addict and you're given the choice of, okay, you have a choice here. You under the new law, you only possessed 1.5 grams of heroin, so it's only a misdemeanor. Now, you could go to court, maybe take a plea or go to trial, or go to drug court. The client's going to say to the defense attorney, well, what does that mean? Well, you're going to have to go every week to court. You're going to have to pee in a cup for probably 75 weeks. You're going to have to go to treatment. You're going to have to do all this. And then the client's going to say to their lawyer, well, what happens if I just take the misdemeanor? Well, you'll get bench probation for 18 months and have to do 40 hours of community service. Well, guess what they're going to say? And Mary Ann and virtually every other criminal defense lawyer I've talked to have said, well, this is going to basically undercut the ability. And by the way, there was bipartisan opposition to this bill, which was rolled out under false pretenses under the last days of the administration by first telling people, oh, this will just be, you know, on get one free one. But no, it got added up. So it's two priors. Then it maybe becomes a felony. And all residue cases, which are what unfortunately many of these are never going to be felonies.
David.
So there are a bunch of things that are actually just flat out wrong and deeply problematic with what District Attorney Marquis just said. First of all, this bill wasn't rolled out in the last part of the session. It's also worth noting that the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association supported the bill So I don't know who he's talking to.
I'm talking to the local public defenders, David.
Attorneys. You know what? I didn't cut you off, Josh. So why don't you actually let me speak for a moment? So the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association in Oregon supported this bill. So that suggests to me that largely criminal defense lawyers around the state, although perhaps not the ones that Mr. Marquis is speaking to, supported this bill. This bill was also supported by the Oregon Sheriff's Association and the Police Chiefs Association, okay? And the other piece that's worth noting is that this bill, you know, part of what Mr. Marquis is saying is that he thinks that the only way to be able to get people access to treatment is by forcing them into treatment. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that forced treatment doesn't work. And one of the reasons why the Sheriff's Association and the Police Chiefs Association supported this bill is because the bill ensured actually that people would have access to treatment despite the change in the sentence that allowed people to rebuild their lives.
If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with David Rogers, the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon, and Josh Marquis, who has served as Clatsop County's district attorney since 1994. They are speaking about a new ACLU campaign entitled They Report to You, designed to educate voters about what the ACLU contends is the too powerful role of district attorneys in the criminal justice system. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Go ahead, Josh, and then I'd like to
Let me try to make it a quick response so you, David and you can move on to some other subjects. The mere fact that that the Chiefs Association and the Sheriff's Association supported the bill, there are many, many things that the Chiefs and the Sheriff's Association support that David does not support. So the mere fact that they were able to bludgeon a couple organizations into going along with it, because frankly, when I debated the president of the Chiefs Association months earlier on OPB, he was under the impression that this was a one free, one bite at the apple, and that's not the way the bill came out. The bill came out very differently. I would challenge David, when it's his turn to speak, to say what in this bill actually created funds for treatment, because we desperately need treatment, particularly in rural coastal parts of Oregon. And the fact of the matter is drug courts are just about the only way in which we can use the criminal justice system to leverage. The other thing I'd like to ask David is, when we're talking about reform, I understand that there are deeply held beliefs on different sides. Some people believe that prison is generally an acknowledgement of failure, that it really, when someone goes to prison, you're essentially giving up on that person. I don't necessarily see that as a case. Oregon is not a state that incarcerates nearly as much as many other states. We're in the bottom third. But what about things like Measure 57, for example, which was a measured response to repeat property offense, which the legislature pulled the rug out from under in House Bill 3078?
And what was Measure 57?
Measure 57 was one of two competing measures on the ballot in 2008. Kevin Mannix, who was a Republican legislator and known for putting very strict, tough law and order, had come up with a measure he called Measure 61 that would have had mandatory minimum sentences for first-time burglars and car thieves. And many of us, including probably David and his organization, and certainly me and my colleagues in the DA Association, thought that was draconian and unfair. So we, an unlikely pairing, got together and supported Measure 57, which said a judge could but wasn't required to give sentences ranging from 13 to 24 months if the person had been convicted of at least 2 to 4 previous felonies. And what happened in the legislature, this most recent session, again in the last few weeks, was in a sharply divided vote, bipartisan on both sides, bipartisan voting for it, bipartisan voting against it, including against it, by the way, by Senator Betsy Johnson, who has voted against all of the things that David's spoken about thus far. So I don't think it's simply a question of ACLU fights for rights, DAs fight to lock people up. I think the system is a lot more nuanced than that. I see the ACLU having a valuable role, and I greatly admire the role of the ACLU over the last decades in being a fervent defender of the First Amendment. But basically, this campaign essentially says nobody knows who their DAs are. Well, that's not true in this county. Maybe it is in some places. We're all powerful, I wish. We are resistant to reform. We could debate that more. And that we're not accessible or accountable. And I would ask him to point to how in this county, the people that listen to this show would think that my office and I'm inaccessible or not accountable.
David, would you like to respond?
To be clear, we're talking about this is a statewide campaign. And so these dynamics are going to be different from county to county. You know, Mr. Marquis is someone who thrives on attention, and in Clatsop County, he is well known. That's actually not debatable. To be clear, this is not a campaign that's somehow anti-district attorney. We realize that district attorneys have tremendous power, which means that they also actually have tremendous power to create positive change. And we believe that the more that voters are engaging district attorneys, talking about their vision for what they want from the justice system and the values that they want to see district attorneys engage in their role, I think that the more we'll actually see real improvements in Oregon's criminal justice system. And there are places where, we do have some disagreements. And there are places where district attorneys have consistently opposed even the most modest of reforms that actually defy the national research around best practices. And so one of them is Measure 11, which was created by Kevin Mannix, who Mr. Marquis just spoke about. It passed in 1994. It creates a set of person-to-person, mandatory minimums for person-to-person crimes. So very, very serious and violent offenses. But it also actually does something that actually defies what the research in the country says is the best approach, which is it automatically treats youth, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, as adults as soon as the prosecutor in a DA's office charges them with a Measure 11 offense. And so what we know is that youth are different. What we know is that the adolescent brain actually is takes a while to develop, and so it's one of the reasons why young people actually age out of certain kinds of behaviors. And what we also know from research from around the country is that putting young people in the adult system makes them more likely to commit future crime, and it's the least effective approach to youth accountability. And yet the most modest suggestions of reforming the way that we're putting young people automatically into the adult system via Measure 11 has categorically and adamantly been fought by the District Attorneys Association in the state. And that is a place where, honestly, we are stuck in the 1990s in ways that do not reflect best practices in the slightest.
I'd like to respond to that.
Sure.
I think David accurately described Measure 11's genesis. In 1994, it passed with about 63% of voters supporting it. It was a reaction largely to the fact that sentences were a joke. Judges would – I was practicing law at that point for 13 years. I was already an elected DA, just barely. And it was very common for people to be sentenced to life in prison for murder. They would serve 8 years. I don't mean they sometimes served. That was the average sentence. If for the rape of, say, an 8-year-old child, the sentence handed down was 20 years, they would normally serve 3.
Was that due to prison crowding?
Partly, but it was a farce, because the prosecutor and the judge got to look like they were tough by handing down this ferocious sounding sentence. And the victim thought, oh, this guy's going to be in prison for 20 years. Let's take the rape, for example. So what Measure 11 did was it has sentences that range from 6 years, if you exclude murder, which is the most, up to a 10 possible. 10 is the highest minimum mandatory. That's for raping a 7-year-old child or the violent rape of a woman. I speak around the state. Mr. Rogers calls it attention speaking. I would call it accountability, since I've never run for any other office and I'm not interested in running for any other office. And I've asked often diverse audiences, what do you think the sentence ought to be for someone with no criminal record, but somebody who grabs an 8-year-old off the street and violently subjects her to sexual intercourse? I have never, in my travels across Oregon, had anyone ever tell me that 8 years in prison is excessive. But let me address the second part of what David said. He forgot to tell you that 6 years later, in 2000, groups like his gathered enough signatures to get a repeal of Measure 11 on the ballot. It was called Measure 94. It didn't just fail. It failed 75 to 25. And since we're talking in Clatsop County and KMUN is a community radio station, we're talking about what happens to some extent in this county and counties around here. I'd ask Mr. Rogers if he knows how many juveniles since Measure 11 in this county, other than for aggravated murder. Actually, there's one young man I tried for aggravated murder who's serving true life. But other than him, how many juveniles do you think were sentenced to full Measure 11 sentences in this county in the last 23 years?
I'm guessing zero.
One.
Okay. But do you think the prison system is a good place for a juvenile?
Generally not. But let's be clear on what a reform done in 1995 by then-Governor Kulongowski did. If you were under the age of 18, it is illegal and unconstitutional for you to be in an adult prison. The Oregon Youth Authority, which was created by Senate Bill 1 and Governor, then-Attorney General Kulongowski, later Governor Kulongowski, came up with the idea that juveniles who commit serious crimes should, for many of the reasons David's stating, not be mixed in. So, for example, a 17-year-old in this county who commits a violent rape and is sentenced, let's say hypothetically, although I don't think this has happened yet, to the full Measure 11 sentence of 8 years, they would never go to an adult facility. They would spend their entire time from age 17 to 24 in an Oregon Youth Authority.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think it's actually pretty misleading in a number of ways. So yes, actually, one place that Oregon is, I think, a really good model is the fact that young people can stay in the Oregon Youth Authority until the age of 25 and not actually be transferred to an adult prison early on. That is actually a very good thing, and that seems like something that we can agree on. But the most modest of reforms has been proposed that would actually suggest that a young person who was convicted of a Measure 11 sentence and actually has been doing incredibly well in the Oregon Youth Authority in their early 20s, if they're poised to essentially get transferred to adult prison, where all of the benefits of actually being in the youth system would be quickly eradicated, that they actually get an opportunity to go back before a judge to be able to have a hearing to make the case that they've been doing incredibly well in terms of their rehabilitation, that they no longer pose a public safety risk, and that they serve the rest of their sentence not actually transferred to adult prison, but under community supervision. That is an incredibly modest proposal that actually represents best practices, and that proposal has been consistently opposed by district attorneys, which defying actually research and logic. But it's also worth noting, I want to point out a couple of examples of how...
And we're just about out of time, David.
I just want to say that Mr. Marquis also responds by actually using the kind of scariest, most violent of examples, which I think is basically a fear-mongering approach to narrowing in people's perspective of the kinds of Measure 11 cases that we're talking about. Because young people are oftentimes charged with Measure 11 for basic youthful activity, right?
Wait a minute. That's like simply not true. Youthful activity means assaulting somebody with
a
baseball bat
minute,
or killing them, David.
Gentlemen, one person at a time,
this
please.
This is exactly an example of what it is I'm talking about. He wants to scare people and actually not be able to talk about the reality of the robbery twos, of the assault twos, that young people can be engaged in a schoolyard fight and be charged as an adult. Okay,
David, and please give us an example in Clatsop County of somebody involved in a schoolyard fight charged with Measure 11. Please just give us a name, one name.
You know, it's actually really not very difficult. And although it may not happen in your county, this is a clear statewide problem. And you have been a barrier to statewide reforms.
Well, let me just briefly, I know time is running out.
Yes, we're just about out.
David is forgetting to tell the listeners that there is a program called Second Look, which does allow under certain, particularly juveniles, that means people under the age of 18 at the time they committed the crime, even if they're 17 and a half, that if they're doing well, exactly as he says, they can come back before a judge and the judge can decide to actually substantially reduce their sentence. Let's also be clear that unless the juvenile was convicted of murder or multiple rape counts, since the longest possible sentence under Measure 11 is rape at 8 years, you can't age out of the system on a single charge. In other words, you are the oldest you could possibly be, 17. You get an 8-year sentence. You're never going to go to the Department of Corrections.
Well, I'm sorry.
I just want to point out that, again,
really quickly,
there's
please.
Only just limited information, and prosecutors and district attorney's offices also oftentimes force young people to plea away, to waive their right to a second look hearing while they're forcing plea agreements, which is a horrible, terrible practice, which basically makes the exact policy, the second look policy that he's just mentioned, essentially unavailable to a large portion of young people.
I appreciate
That's the full story.
Thank you. I appreciate the spirited discussion, but we are out of time. I do, again, appreciate the spirited discussion on these important issues. I want to thank my guests, David Rogers, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon, and Josh Marquis, who has served as Clatsop County's district attorney since 1994. They have been speaking about a new ACLU campaign entitled They Report to You, designed to educate voters about what the ACLU contends is the too powerful role of district attorneys in the criminal justice system. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Joanne Rideout. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thank you for listening.